This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, we're going to be talking about some female-centric new films, Ex Machina and The Age of Adeline. There's also going to be some talk about Bill Plimpton's cheating and a quick little look at Little Boy and The Water Diviner. There's also going to be news, the trailer park, some box office predictions, and of course the world-famous DVD roundup. But before we get to all that, this is how you can get a hold of me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to find me on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
All right, Ron Burgundy, let's move right into the news, because there's a bunch of things I want to talk about, and actually back-ending this into the trailer park, there's some things that I want to talk to about a little trailer that dropped last week that deserves some attention and some analysis. But before that, let's talk about a couple little pieces of news. At CinemaCon, there are a whole bunch of studios releasing information and trailers and footage and sizzle reels and all that. One of the things that stood out to me in all of this was Sony is still scrambling on what to do for a game plan on Spider-Man. Now, of course, we all know that they've been trying to get a little bit of piece of the Avengers pie, and Spider-Man should be showing up in Civil War, which is the third Captain America movie, even though it's really going to be about more than just Captain America. But one of the big pieces of news about Spider-Man is Sony is developing a standalone animated Spider-Man movie. It's going to be directed by Chris Miller and Phil Lord. If you don't know who those are the people who are responsible for 21 Jump Street, the reboot, and more importantly, from the animation level, the Lego movie, which was a monster hit last year. Of course, we have to keep this in mind and sort of mitigate this a bit. The Lego movie was a huge hit, but it was also a February release, and nobody expected it to be as huge as it was, and even then it wasn't a $400 million movie. I'm just hoping that Sony is checking their expectations, because this may not be the billion-dollar movie that they need for the Spider-Man franchise itself. Maybe people are just kind of getting fatigued on Spider-Man. Maybe people aren't dying for the next Spider-Man movie, because when Spider-Man, the first one, came out, and even the second one, back in 2002 and 2004, those movies were unique. You didn't have the big-budget superhero movies that you do now that dominate the box office. Another piece of news, Star Wars Rogue One, which is going to be starring Felicity Jones. Of course, big excitement on my end for that. This is going to be a look at the behind the scenes of stealing the Death Star plans for the second Death Star. So this is being branded as Star Wars Anthology, and it's a bunch of movies that are going to be standalone things. I think they're talking about doing a Boba Fett movie, a Han Solo movie, these sort of filling in the gaps and creating their own extended universe that was done. They're basically following the pattern that was set up with all the books that were written back in the 90s, and this is a good thing. Then there's a couple pieces of news that are a little bit distressing. E.L. James, of course, was causing problems with the 50 Shades of Grey sequel. Now, apparently, her husband, Neil Leonard, will be writing the screenplay. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, here's the thing where she was all concerned because she didn't have enough control, and she's wrestling more control, and that caused the loss of a director. And so she's exerting control in the most intimate way possible by letting her husband write the screenplay. There's serious bear traps that are going to be possible in this series. The next piece of what could possibly go wrong is the Ghostbusters reboot is going to cost $150 million to make. That is a risky move. That is a lot of money to be throwing behind a movie. Because here's the thing. These movies never come in under budget. And with $150 million, it's likely going to have a $300 million final budget. Ultimately, it has to be a monster hit. And if Sony should have learned anything from the last couple years with the Spider-Man reboot is you can't just assume because it's a popular property that it's going to be a monster hit as big as the previous ones. Now, here's something that might actually go right in terms of movie news. The final Maze Runner movie, which is going to come out in 2017, that one is going to not be split in two, which is good. This is what they did with Hunger Games, of course, Harry Potter, Twilight. They're doing it with Divergent. They are not going to split the final book into two, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's actually them looking ahead and seeing the potential pitfalls of the Divergent series, because I really think Divergent 3.1 and 3.2 are not going to be strong movies. I think they're going to see a huge drop-off, because already there was a little bit of a drop-off from Divergent to Insurgent, and there's going to be a huge drop-off for 3, especially if people know it's only the first half of a movie, which they've kind of gotten savvy to that, the movie audiences. Even Hunger Games had a drop-off. Not, I mean, it still made tons of money, but it still had a drop-off. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr, and that sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. We only have one trailer to play this week, because that's the one that a lot of people are talking about. We played the Star Wars trailer last week. We got that in there. Let's talk about Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. I'm just going to play the trailer. I've got a lot to say, not just about the trailer, but about what's happening with it and the news behind it.
Is it really surprising that the most powerful man in the world should be a figure of controversy?
Human beings have a horrible track record of following people of great power.
Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Chaos.
Devils don't come from hell beneath us.
They brought their war here.
No, they come from the sky.
That's how it starts. The fever. The rage, the feeling of powerlessness that turns good men cruel.
Tell me, do you bleed? You will.
First of all, this is a teaser. It's not really a trailer. There's a difference. A teaser is to get you excited, and it gives you imagery, and it gives you an idea of what the movie's going to look like and feel like, but you really don't get a lot of story. That's what happened with the Star Wars. That's why the last trailer they dropped for Star Wars was called the Teaser 2, because it doesn't give you any idea about what the story is, which is kind of good. That's what teasers are for. So it's not a bad teaser. I mean, it shows its hand in terms of what you expect from Zack Snyder, but there wasn't much in this, and a lot of people have overanalyzed the teaser itself. I'm going to look at behind the scenes of that. This was botched from the get-go, because if you recall, last week there was a big rumor that there was going to be a trailer released online, and Zack Snyder then on Thursday said, well, we're not going to release a trailer, you can go see it in IMAX, and you can go to this site and get tickets, it was free, and I went and I downloaded some tickets, and I went to go see it. But they were stupid, because not only were they hyping the release of an announcement for a trailer you're not going to see for 4 or 5 days, they did it right in the middle of Star Wars Celebration. And they should have known that there was going to be some Star Wars news, and there was a teaser for Star Wars The Force Awakens that dropped, which stole all of its thunder. And then the Batman vs. Superman trailer ended up leaking online. And so you had this blurry version of it, but it was actually the trailer with Portuguese subtitles. So anybody who was really dying to see the trailer saw it already. Then they finally had their hand forced, and they had to release a high-res version of it, and so they did. And then we waited around until Monday. And I've been to these events before where they do these sort of IMAX previews. They did one for Guardians of the Galaxy last summer. A couple years ago, they did one for Tron Legacy. They did one for Avatar. And each time they've done that, they've always included extra footage, some bonus features, something else than just the trailer. This time, it was just the trailer. It was an introduction by Zack Snyder. They played the trailer. Then Zack Snyder came back on and said, oh yeah, we're gonna play the trailer again. And you can look and see this scene was shot in IMAX, and this little bit, they had like a 5-second clip in the end of the trailer that you didn't see online. Which was ultimately, it amounted to like what would have been shown at a Comic-Con or CinemaCon or some sort of convention. Not for bringing people out of their house to go all the way to the IMAX theater to see something. And I didn't even watch the trailer beforehand. I even told that to people. I said, no, this was botched because it wasn't exciting for me and I didn't watch the trailer online. So they needed more to this. They needed to give something more. They needed to give a uniqueness to this event. They should have shown at least some. They could have at least done a sizzle reel and did some reveals and added something. And people said, well, they didn't know the trailer was going to leak. You got to get ahead of that stuff. Even if it was just 5 or 10 seconds of flashing footage, it could have been something different. But then it was anticlimactic. I remember when it ended, everyone was kind of like, oh, well, there we go. We walked out. It wasn't even in 3D, which they're pushing it as a 3D movie. They didn't even have the trailer in 3D, which was stupid. And now they've got to keep this hype going for 11 months, which is doubtful you can do. Everything I've said about this, of them rushing and back-ending the Justice League prep into this, they're kind of scrambling and they're not going about this smartly. It could be a great movie. I mean, I could go see it and love it, but, you know, we'll see. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Age of Adeline and Ex Machina. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about some female-centric movies. You know, there's all this talk in gender politics and in Hollywood and people complaining there's not enough movies about women. Now, these are both movies that are directed by men, of course. But both of the movies I'm going to talk about in this segment are ultimately strong female characters. Even though Ex Machina is about two guys and a female android. The Age of Adeline, which I'm going to talk about first, this is very female-centric. And in The Age of Adeline, a woman who never ages lives for more than a century until she finds love, which causes her to rethink how she approaches life.
Adeline Bowman lived a normal life. Until one cold winter night in 1935. From that moment, she would never age another day.
Don't you miss having someone to love?
It's not the same when there's no growing old together. Without that love is just heartbreak.
It's funny, after I saw this movie, my wife asks me, "What would you think?" Because this is not my kind of movie. When it comes to romances, I generally like rom-coms. I like cute romances. I don't like the heavier, drippy romances, that's all about emotion and really doesn't have a whimsical side to it. I like a good rom-com. But this isn't a comedy at all. It's not even close. And so I said to her, I go, "Well, it's for people who liked The Lake House." And she looks at me, she goes, "I like The Lake House." I go, "I know you did. I took her to see it way back when they screened it." And the thing is, I thought The Lake House was okay. But it's also kind of forgettable. And that's the way I felt about The Age of Adeline. The Lake House, The Time Traveler's Wife, those kind of movies, there's a certain sort of fantastical element to them that make it more than just a run-of-the-mill romance. And I'll tell you, at least it's not a Nicholas Sparks movie, because that stuff's garbage. So this movie, it's, in my opinion, it's a really tired plot. We've seen this kind of thing, the ageless romance. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Winter's Tale last year, where Winter's Tale was about this guy who never died and love kept him alive. But ultimately, I mean, for what it's intending to be, a serious romance that is supposed to explore something in a fantastic sense, it's okay. But there are some serious problems with it. The first of which is it relies on narration. Narration is a terrible crutch. And it's become extremely popular recently, like in the last 10 years, not with just movies like Twilight, but you have a lot of TV shows rely on narration. And it used to be it was odd for a TV show to have narration. Something like The Wonder Years had narration. It was a unique spin to it. Now, TV shows constantly have narration to them. I mean, you have like Grey's Anatomy, which is a drama. You've got Scrubs had narration to it. Desperate Housewives was narrated by the woman who killed herself in the TV show. You have other shows now, like stuff like The Goldbergs and The Middle. All these kind of movies, they rely on narration. It's a lazy form of screenwriting because you should be showing, not telling. And you can get away with it on a whimsical comedy. But if it's done to kind of give an inner monologue to somebody like Dexter had, I think that's okay. And I can see where something like Twilight did it, even though I would hardly accuse the Twilight movies of being well written. Twilight used narration because it was, the book was told in first person, I believe, by Bella's character. And this one just has obvious narration, and it just seems like they're using the narration to compress time and to explain the more fantastic side of it and give the setup for the movie that they kind of rush through in the first 20 minutes just to get to Blake Lively walking around and looking pretty. But that's my other problem with it. I mean, Blake Lively's an very attractive woman. She's not a great actress. She's not terrible in this. She's kind of flat in this one, acting-wise. She's got plenty of chest going on in the movie. Trust me. I checked. I was looking for that. She's very, her delivery's very flat. I think they're trying to do it as her being this old soul. And she's acting like an old woman, but she's in this very attractive young body. But she's not terribly remarkable in this, aside from just looking beautiful. And which dovetails into the whole thing that this movie's not really about love, it's about vanity. Because it's about her having to do all this stuff to keep her youthful appearance. And she ends up going on the run because she keeps changing identities like every 10 years because she never ages. Because she makes herself stunning and beautiful and people wouldn't believe. Like, there's a scene where she's stopped by a cop and he's like, you're supposed to be 43 years old or something like that. And she's like, yes. I'm like, well, you know what? If you had any sort of brains, you wouldn't make yourself completely knocked down gorgeous if it becomes obvious to people. Just, you know, don't use makeup for one day. You know, when the guy falls in love with her, you're kind of like, aside from the fact that she's really pretty, there's nothing remarkable about her. It's also very convenient at times and predictable. And there's wild coincidences that even if somebody lives 106 years, you're not going to run into these coincidences. But you know what? Ultimately, for the audience this is going for the romance crowd, it's fine. I was dreading this movie, but it was a lot better than I expected. So I'm going to say The Age of Adeline kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Ex Machina. In this one, a programmer is brought to a remote facility to evaluate an artificially intelligent android.
You are dead center of the greatest scientific event in the history of man.
Do you have a name?
Ava.
How do you feel about her?
Her AI is beyond doubt.
No, nothing analytical. Just how do you feel?
I feel that she's amazing.
Dude.
Caleb, you're wrong.
Wrong about what?
Nathan, you shouldn't trust anything he says.
This movie is from A24, which last year had an incredibly impressive slate. An incredibly impressive slate, especially with speculative fiction. They did movies like Under the Skin and Enemy. They had some great stuff last year. This year's not as strong as so far. I mean, we're in April, but it's not as strong. Maybe they have stuff later on, but A24 releases some very unique films, and they're not afraid to take risks. Now, what's neat about this one is I've always said I love the kind of movies where somebody's trying to better humanity and they do something that goes horribly awry. So that has a little bit of this, and it reminds me a little bit of Transcendence, which came out about a year ago. It's a better film than Transcendence, but it contemplates the nature of artificial intelligence, the constant question of man playing God, the modern Prometheus, which goes all the way back to Frankenstein. But what's interesting with this is the character Oscar Isaac plays, who creates Ava, the android. He says, oh, I'm like God. And I'm like, well, you know, here's the difference. This is something that I don't think that's ever really been addressed in these kind of movies, is God in the creation story created man, but man was not God. He kind of created down. God was God, an all-powerful supreme being, and then create something lesser than him. These kind of movies are, with the scientist who always wants to be God, they're creating something that's better than them. Not necessarily Frankenstein, but you take that Frankenstein archetype and you attach it to something like Ex Machina, where you've got in high intelligence and stronger physical, everything is superior about an android in terms of its speed of capacity of memory and its physical form. So in this one, humans are creating up. And that's where the danger is if you create something that's better than you, it's going to take you over. And that is a grounded concept in this that they never actually state, but they swerve close to that. And that's kind of a neat concept to think about because no one ever states it that way. I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to spoil too much. If you like speculative fiction, if you like these movies of questionable morals in the human endeavors, this is a great one for that. I thought it was at times fascinating. I thought it was beautifully designed. It was very well acted. Ex Machina kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be burning through a couple more reviews, Little Boy, The Water Diviner, and Bill Plimpton's Cheating. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Shirt, too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts.
Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling into the next segment with some movie reviews. We're going to do something a little bit different in this segment because there are two movies that are releasing. One is getting about 1,000 theater release, but it's kind of being poorly released and not promoted very well, and they didn't screen it, and that one's Little Boy. There's also The Water Diviner, which I would imagine would have gotten a better send-off, but it didn't. This is an Australian Academy Award winning film. It's being released by Warner Brothers, but they're sort of, you know, not doing a very good job with this one. They didn't screen that one either. So normally I try as best as I can to see these films, and I didn't get a chance to see these, but I'm going to hit these really, really quick and kind of give you impressions. First one, Little Boy. A 7-year-old boy believes that his faith can bring his father home from fighting in World War II.
My story takes place on the home front. That's my dad.
I wanted to be just like him.
Everything we did became a great adventure.
Do you believe we can do this?
Yes, I believe we can do this!
You're going to war.
Yes.
I don't want you to go.
Your faith is powerful.
But if I get enough faith, nothing's impossible, right?
Even bringing my dad home?
Your faith won't work if you have even the slightest bit of doubt.
I believe it's a faith-based movie. It doesn't specifically say it, but it's in the trailer it says it's from Roma Downey and it's from the people who brought you Son of God. And we've had a lot of these faith-based movies. Actually, last year we had a lot of them. It's sort of the releases of them seem to have slowed down this year. I'm not exactly sure why. But, you know, like the last year or 18 months, there was a huge glut of these faith-based movies, and they did extremely well. And this one, we really haven't seen too many showing up and doing terribly well in 2015. I'm not even making a statement as to why that happened. Whether it was, you know, sort of like the fad for mainstream versions of these has kind of played its course, or it's just there are fewer coming out right now, or maybe it's the independent companies that realize that they're making these movies haven't kind of, there's a little bit of a cycle for them to bring out their next films. If you go by what these films have done before, it's going to have some problems simply because its name is not immediately recognizable as a faith-based film. This looks like a Hallmark movie. The kids arguably cute, a little annoying in the trailer, but it looks like it's just one of those if you believe things can happen kind of movies, and its heart's in the right place, and I'm sure it's a perfectly fine, charming movie, but it just feels really cheesy to me, and that's just from the trailer. It's got a decent cast. I mean, it's got Todd Wilkinson's in it. Kevin James shows up in there, and Michael Rapaport, which I'm not saying that he's a huge name right now. He's been around and he was a bigger name back in the 90s. I don't know. I would have expected this to come out around Easter to sort of capitalize on the faith angle on this, but it's not. But, you know, they didn't screen it. And I reached out to the studio specifically and I'm like, hey, look, give me a chance to see this and I'll cover your movie. And they didn't. They said they'd try and they didn't. So, you know what? If you don't show your movie to press, it probably sucks. So it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
The next one I want to hit really quick is The Water Diviner. This one stars Russell Crowe as a farmer down in Australia at the end of World War I. He travels halfway around the world to track down his sons, who are presumed dead after a battle.
I'll find them, love. I'll find them and I'll bring them home to you.
Your guidebook is out of date.
I didn't come here to sightsee. I'm on my way to Gallipoli.
There's nothing there but ghosts.
You walk off your farm, you turn up in this place of horrors, and for what?
My sons were all killed in one day. I can find them.
Maybe we could help him.
You know what the chances of finding his boys are.
He's the only father who came looking.
This is one that was kind of on my radar just because I remember hearing about it earlier, and it caused enough of a buzz because it won the Australian Academy Awards. It was not promoted in America, and now it's still even not promoted in America. It's opening this weekend, but we didn't get a screening at all. I don't know anybody who did. I don't even know anyone who this is really on their radar. It's only in like 300 theaters. It looks like it's beautifully shot. I thought I saw Jai Courtney somewhere in that trailer, which usually bodes poorly for a film. But it also has Olga Korolenko, who is a former Bond girl. She was in Quantum of Solace. And she had made some movies earlier, like she was in Hitman, and she kind of saw her star rising in the late 2000s. And then she was like, well, I'm not going to do nude scenes anymore, and I'm going to do significant films. And that was the end of her. She didn't transition well into American pictures because I think she may have turned into a bit of a prima donna. The last time I saw her was in that movie with Pierce Brosnan, where he played a former spy. It came out last September. She shows up periodically, but I don't think anyone's stampeding to put her in the movie. Oh, you know, I think she's gorgeous. So The Water Diviner, I mean, it looks, again, like an inspiring, beautifully made movie, but you know what? When the studio kind of hides it or doesn't get behind it at all, there's got to be something wrong with it. So I'm going to say The Water Diviner, it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is a new animated film, well, sort of new. It actually has been rolling out for a while, and it's finally coming to my hometown of Columbus, Ohio this weekend. And in fact, the director, Bill Plimpton, is going to be in Columbus on Monday the 27th at the Gateway Film Center. So if you want to meet him and ask him questions and see this movie on the big screen, that's a great chance to see it. Otherwise, you can get it on Vimeo on demand. It's like $5 to rent, $10 to buy. And that is Cheatin'. This surreal animated film follows a married couple who, after a misunderstanding, goes down a path of infidelity and potential murder. Well, as you can tell, there's no dialogue in here. It's not a silent film, but it's a non-dialogue movie, which is always an interesting way to do an animated film. And actually, in a weird way, animated films lend themselves more to a non-dialogue presentation. And I don't know exactly why that's the case, but this one works. And if you're not familiar with Bill Plimpton's animation, it's this beautifully grotesque, surreal look at the world and the human form. And it's recognizable, but it also is very abstract at times and very stylized. Reminds me a little bit of the animation you see in a movie like The Triplets of Belleville or something like that. But ultimately, I gotta say, I mean, Cheatin' was an interesting movie. And the reason is because I love animation anyways, but it's a feat to make a movie that doesn't use dialogue and doesn't explain. You know how I was talking about in The Age of Adeline, where they use narration to a fault in that movie? There's no narration in Cheatin', but you get what's going on. You got to watch it. You can't half watch it out of the corner of your eye while you're playing around on Facebook, but it gets its entire message across without a lick of dialogue. And that is an impressive feat. The movie's only like 70 minutes long. It's short. It's an animated feature. But it's, like I said, the animation is very stylized. It's very weird looking, but cool. Even though it uses modern techniques, it could have been done in the 60s or the 70s. It has a very sketchy look to it. But it also swerves into these weird, surreal moments that are sometimes a little heavy-handed in terms of the imagery. But it's I think, a beautifully made film. What's interesting is Bill Plimpton had run a Kickstarter campaign for this. And he went for like $75,000 to make this movie, and he got his backers. And that's why I said it's been out for a while, because, once he finished the film, he ended up making over $100,000 in the Kickstarter campaign. Once he finished the film, he was able to provide it to the people who had given to the campaign. And it was already out there. And so now it's rolling out. And like I said, you can get it on VOD pretty easily. If you're in Columbus, Ohio or around in Columbus, Ohio, you can go to the Gateway Film Center and meet Bill Plimpton in a Q&A on April 27th. He's been doing a tour. He's been doing a lot of dates and moving, taking the movie around with him to smaller theaters. He's a real true independent filmmaker. And if you like independent films and you like something different, this is definitely one to check out. I'm going to say that Cheatin' kind of rocks. Not the act, the movie. So if my wife's listening, no secret messages here. But anyways, the movie kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, that's it for movie reviews. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about The Fat Guy, Sound Off, the box office, and the world-famous DVD Roundup. Because we can! Uh-oh. 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 Uh-oh.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Back at you with Fat Guys at the Movies and Kevin Carr. We are wrapping things up. We got a final segment. We can talk a little bit more. I'm going to go into a Fat Guy Sound Off. I was originally going to do a user-recommended movie, but I actually pushed it to next week because there's just so many things have happened kind of behind the scenes in my industry that I think are interesting to people outside of my industry. It all stems from the fact that Film Threat, the online periodical, filmthreat.com, is no more. It went out of business. It was shut down. Which is odd because it's a website and it's a lot easier to keep the lights on a website just to keep it running. Honestly, even if you have a huge number of pages, you're talking a couple $100 a year to actually just keep a website live if people want to visit it. But Film Threat has a long history. Chris Gore started the magazine when he was in high school and it was actually a print periodical. It was bought by Larry Flint and published, and then it went back, and then Chris Gore got it back, and it went online. It became kind of one of the premier websites of the turn of the century. You know, it was kind of like Film Threat and Ain't It Cool News. These were sort of the big boys of the jungle. And there's a certain personal connection I have to it, is because I had my first legitimate online reviews, interviews, and features there. It was the first website that was an honest-to-God film website, and not some local news version of something, but a website that actually printed my stuff. And I, even though they didn't pay, it gave me a certain degree of street cred and it sort of introduced me to the business. So I have my roots there. I was, of course, fired for being too mainstream eventually. Gore fired me because I was too mainstream thinking because he was about giving the finger to Hollywood. I wrote a positive review of 51st Dates with Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. Chris emailed me and basically said that they weren't going to use me anymore. So yeah, Adam Sandler, I'm blaming you for this one. Anyways, Gore has his hands back on Film Threat and he started a Kickstarter campaign and I would have really supported it. But here's the problem. When they started this Kickstarter campaign to save the magazine, the online magazine, and bring it back and redesign it and do all this stuff, they basically held the site hostage. If you went to any page, even your old interviews that you wrote and you published on that had been online for 15 years, if you went to the archive to try and find it, you couldn't. It's just everything went to the Kickstarter page. You couldn't even find a review. You couldn't even find anything you ever wrote. He basically took the entirety of the site, put it away, and pointed it at the Kickstarter campaign, which I thought was a real jerk move. Because these are people who wrote for free a decade or more ago and helped it become a significant film site, and then it was pulled out from below, and you did not get a chance to go in and archive your stuff. You didn't get a chance to go do screen grabs. And I probably have some old ones lying around, but they just shut the doors. Boom. It was over. Which, that was a low blow. To the writers who helped build the site for you. Gore was asking for $125,000 to do the site redesign, and then he wanted to, you know, bring back some video stuff that he did on Attack of the Show. And he, $125,000 to get this thing going. He ended up with $63,725, which is just a little bit, just a hair over half. But half of that came from two large donations at the very end, at the 11th hour. One was a $10,000 donation, another was $20,000 donation. I don't know the details behind those. It could have been somebody hoping that they could get an ownership stake in the site, or it could have been somebody who just made the donation to look good but knew they weren't going to make their reserve. But the bottom line is, it only got 389 backers. That's it. There's a lot of problems with the Kickstarter campaign, and you can dissect it. You can say, well, Gore's ego made him try to resurrect DVD Doomsday, which is what he did on Attack of the Show, and that didn't necessarily have anything to do with Film Threat. It was more about his ego to be back on front of the camera. You know, possibly he asked for too much. I mean, like I said, the cheating Kickstarter campaign only asked for $75,000. They ended up getting $100,000. They overwent their what the reserve was, and he was asking for $125,000, which is that's a significant amount. And the other thing you could say is maybe, you know, he had a $5, the lowest donation, and a lot of people do $1, the lowest donation. But the bottom line is, when it comes down to it, even just for $5, less than 400 people put up any money to save Film Threat. In spite of 9,000 Facebook likes for Film Threat, and in spite of 82,000 Twitter followers, in spite of 360,000 Twitter followers from Chris Gore, you only got enough people to give money to this that could maybe fill a decent-sized movie theater. That's it. Less than 400 people. Now, this is indicative of what's happening in the entertainment industry, in the reporting industry, anyways, because it's all going online. Forget Hollywood Reporter print edition. Nobody reads that. It is so click-driven right now. You're no longer having guys who are just working out of their dorm rooms and their basements and they just doing it for fun. They need ad revenue. If they're going to be sending people to Comic-Con and CinemaCon and covering stuff and then paying for development of the site and paying for lawyer fees, they need revenue. And they're chasing traffic for it. And it's getting very click heavy. People are publishing stuff that has very little legs in terms of the longevity of a story. And it's just only there to get those clicks from that one day. And that's resulting in bad reporting. And this all comes back to the Batman versus Superman trailer. There was a time when reporting online was different. Back in 2010, I mean, just 5 years ago, there were leaked images of the Thor costume tests. And not everybody posted them. And the people that did kind of got chided by other people in the industry. Only the bottom dwellers were really doing it. The higher class sites kind of were saying, hey, you don't need to do this. That's not news. And I remember in 2008, the Wolverine trailer leaked after Comic-Con. And then even the Wolverine cameo in the X-Men First Class movie was spoiled by putting it in headlines just because people wanted people to click on their story so badly. And the people that did that, those were the bottom feeders in the industry. Those were the people that had just their blogs, and they had no dignity and they had no sense of quality in their reporting. Fast forward 5 years, Variety, in their story about the Batman versus Superman leaked trailer, they literally have the trailer embedded in their story. The pirated trailer. We've gone from the middle players shunning the smaller sites for doing that kind of crap. And now Variety and EW and the Hollywood Reporter, they're posting this stuff. And this industry is in for a reckoning. It's in for an implosion. And woe to those who haven't built a core audience about themselves rather than riding the coattails of leaks and rumors and piracy, because that stuff's going to fall apart. That's going to collapse under its own weight. It's gotten so bad, and it really can be traded. It's not because of the Sony hack, but with the Sony hack, you saw the feeding frenzy that took off from there, and this is going to be like the clickhole headlines and the... Notice how you don't see that upworthy headlines anymore? That burned itself out fast. You're going to see this burn itself out fast, and you're having these sites that they're having traffic skyrocketing, and they're going to crash because they're not going to have a leg to stand on because they're building their readership and banking their reputation on stuff with very, very little dignity and very small legs. Kind of reminds me of colleagues of mine who get excited when they get quoted on like a TV ad. They use a pull quote for a TV ad or something like that. And they're all excited, and I'll see people linking on Facebook, and I'm like, you don't realize they're not quoting you. They're either just getting the words and then your name is so small you can't even read it, or they're quoting the outlet. They don't care who wrote it. They just want the name of the outlet. Like if you write for Variety, nobody cares what you say. They care what Variety says. And that's the danger when you're in this business. That's why I have a certain amount of bulletproofness to this, because I don't really write for anyone. I write for myself. I'm on the radio for myself. I do Fat Guys at the Movies for myself. People listen to me because they want to hear what I have to say, because I am Fat Guys at the Movies. I don't get the highest ratings. I don't get the most clicks on the internet when I say stuff, but at least the people that come to me and hear what I have to say, they're coming to me. And if you don't think the outlets are in the feeding frenzy with no uniqueness about them, go talk to the people at Film Threat. Because 400 people gave money to Film Threat. For enough to fill a movie theater is about how much people are willing to pay for a website. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on into the box office. Last week I said Furious 7 was going to win. I was right. That was a really easy bet, actually. It beat Paul Blart, but Paul Blart did pretty well. It made $24 million. And Unfriended did okay with $16 million. Monkey Kingdom came in less than $5 million, but that was to be expected for a nature video. True Story didn't even make the top 10. This week's everything's up in the air because Furious 7 could win again, but I mean, by this point, it's going to be making like $15 or $18 million. And that opens it up for a lot of other films to come in. I think The Age of Adaline is actually going to win the weekend with like close to $20 million, just because there hasn't been a good romance out for a while, and I think that the audience is looking for that. This is sort of pre-counter-programming for The Avengers. And Age of Adaline is going to survive really well next week because that will be counter-programming to The Avengers. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. Taken 3, which wasn't as good as Taken 1 or 2, but that is out there. A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night is an Iranian-based film about vampires and sexuality. Very interesting. It's not an Iranian film, but it takes place in Iran. An interesting movie. A little bit of a slow-burn foreign horror film. Kind of horror. It's not terribly horrific. And then the other one I really want to hit on is Breakin' and Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo is now out on Blu-ray. You can get them both. It's from Shout Factory. If you want to just immerse yourself in the 80s and get the 80s version of the step-up movies, check these out. They're really stupid movies, but they're a lot of fun. They got some good dancing in it, too. And then finally, the stinker of the week is Cake, and that stars Jennifer Aniston in her Oscar grab performance that really didn't inspired too many people. I did get cupcakes out of it. The studio sent me some cupcake mix. That's the best thing I can say about Cake. Next week, we're going to be talking about Avengers Age of Ultron. I'm sure you've heard of that movie. And a couple other smaller ones to fill in the gaps. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.